Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Going Old School Show. Chips, Crow, and Joe here for you live on blogtalkradio.com, 7 p.m. sharp Eastern Time on June 8th, Wednesday of the year 2022. And without further ado, let's bring on the other wheels. From left to right on your computer screen, let's bring in the one and only John Crow. JC, how you doing today, buddy? Little play-by-play.
I am doing well, and I will be wearing the home whites trimmed in green numerals coming out, going left to right on your radio dial.
And moving laterally and creating every sort of obstacle known to man as a guy on my right on your computer screen, and that would be Mr. Joe Foran. Joe, how are you today? Thanks for your time, buddy.
He's doing good. He dibbles and dabbles. He's on the – and no, let him be a smash of him. Oh, wait.
It's all about – good guys, man. Again, thanks for your time. But, hey, a little bit to talk about here today, as we will. We'll talk about baseball, obviously, with the Red Sox specifically. We'll talk about them, our MLB top five power rankings, this day in Pittsburgh Pirates history. And two managers fired in Major League Baseball thus far early in the season. Is that going to become a trend? And I want to get the guys' thoughts on whether, you know, teams are panicking a little bit earlier than they should. So we'll talk about that as well. I have a little NFL minicamp quarterback-specific thought, if you will, if you want to get into some NFL mandatory minicamp that's open here in New England and across the NFL. What's next for the Boston Bruins? And they played their best pay-no-attention-to-the-man-behind-the-curtain routine during the NBA Finals as they made a move in their coaching ranks this week. We'll get the boys' opinion on that and yours truly as well. But we do have to start off on the eve, actually the eve, in a couple hours. It'll be game three from the Boston Garden here with the Celtics Golden States, all Golden Warriors, all knotted up at one. Guys, let's talk about the NBA Finals and game three tonight beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern. History dictates that the team that wins game three when the series is all knotted at one game apiece goes on to win the series 83% of the time. So a pivotal game, if you will, JC. But let's kind of recap the series and talk about what we need to see from both teams as we enter game three, JC.
Yeah, it is pivotal. Do we dare say that the Celtics think of it as a must-win game at home, even though it's really not a must-win because they've come back from 2-1 before and they've come back from 3-2 down before. But you know, it's a tale of two games, you know. But unfortunately for the Celtics, their superstar, if you want to call him that, Jason Tatum, has been consistently not the superstar we need him to be in this series. And if not for an explosive fourth quarter in game one, the Celtics will be looking at this series down 2-0 for one reason. Third quarter woes. What is wrong with this team? Not only in this series, but in previous series against the Heat and the Bucks, for whatever reason, this team comes out of the locker room thinking that they can just roll their jocks out, yep, get to what they need to do, and they'll be fine. In this series, in two games, they've been outscored 73-38. And then, you know, like I said, if not for an amazing 40-14 fourth quarter in game one, they yep would be behind the eight ball. They need consistency from Jason Tatum, and they need a response to Draymond Green, and I'm sure we'll get into that as the show goes on.
You'll get a response from Green. I'm telling you this much. Celtics aren't going to sit back and let Draymond Green yap, talk, and do everything he wants because it's like, you know what, he basically called out the refs. So we'll see. He's too busy yapping with Cedric Cornbread Maxwell about how it used to be in the year. And, you know, the guy, hey, look, he did his job. He got under our skin. But I see the Celtics have not lost back-to-back all playoffs yet. And it seems like when they sense of urgency is there, they step up. And, you know, Jason hasn't shot very well, but he did have 13 assists in game one. Third quarter's killed us big time. It's like, and they just, I don't get it coming out of the third quarter. You would think you would want to prove a point, but they haven't. But did Golden State light a fire under Boston's ass? Because Mr. Poole kind of rubbed it in our face and was playing games and giving weird looks. So you don't give any teams bulletin board material while the game's going on while you're losing by 29 points. That was a rookie mistake by Mr. Poole because Curry was playing professional and just going about his way, while Mr. Poole seemed to just want to turn that dagger just a little bit more each time. And don't tell me not to a Celtic to a man hasn't forgotten about that.
Joe Foran, Johnny Sunshifts, John Crow here on the Going Old School Show. If you want to join us, we're talking a little NBA Finals right now. You can at 515-602-9730. Once again, 515-602-9730. Let's get into the teams. And I'm going to start with the Celtics. And an overall point of view, John, and this is what we've talked about briefly on our during the playoffs about the Boston Celtics and their mentality. And the mentality right now is their backs against the wall. They performed well with their backs against the wall. Joe just pointed that out. I get it. Are we at some point, can they keep playing Houdini and getting to the stage where the backs are against the wall and winning? Because I'm still waiting for that shooter job, JC. I mean, at some point, and this is a good Golden State Warrior team, and we'll get into them after, but that backs against the wall mentality, it scares me as a Celtic fan because at some point it's going to run dry.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there's always that concern with this team. You know, you can only touch fire so much before it burns your skin. And, you know, this team, for whatever reason, likes to walk that line. And I kind of look at it like the last series. I think the Celtics, 1 through 15, are a better team than the Golden State Warriors. Will they play to that potential 48 good minutes enough to win four games? Mm-hmm. Remains to be seen. You know, what bugged me about the other night, and I will put this disclaimer out there right at the get-go. The referees did not lose the game for the Boston Celtics in Game 2. The Boston Celtics lost it for them.
Mm-hmm.
The Celtics' problem was they thought the referees would take care of Draymond Green and give him a second technical when he deserved it. Feet were all over Jaylen Brown. He tried to pull his shorts down after receiving one technical early again. Any normal circumstance, that gets you thrown out. But let's be honest. There's no way in the earth are they going to throw Draymond Green out in that game.
Right.
But the problem is you did nothing to react to it, much like game one against Milwaukee. Milwaukee came out, punched in the face, and you were like, yeah, we'll shoot our way out of it. And no. 18 turnovers later, you lost the game by 19. Could have been 40. So I want them to get back to what they do best, take care of the ball, pass, hit the open man, hit the open shot, and defend the way they can. In this series, they really have not done that. Yes, they won game one. They weren't great defensively in game one. I mean, yes, 21 points for Stephen Curry in the first period. Then they kind of shut him down 13 points, but they weren't great. They got looks in that game. They played a good 12 minutes. That's about it. The one guy that I look for that has to step it up, Marcus Smart. He's like a minus 20 in the series so far. Really has not been an integral part of this. Because remember, in that game one, fourth quarter, he was on the bench.
Yep.
It was Pritchard and White who were bringing that comeback to fruition. So he needs to do it. He's the one guy who can bring that kind of physicality and that motivation. And then your studs got to step up, Tatum and Brown. We say it every single game. Yes, they got to step up. And Brown did it, started the fourth quarter, got the comeback going. But Jason Tatum has got to be more forceful when things start to go negatively for this team.
Well, I agree with you, JC. And look, the stars going to show up, and your role players can score more than 2 points between Average Al, Smart, and the rest of the crew. Were like, nobody did anything, and Jaylen Brown went silent after the first quarter the other night. So, look, let's see what kind of fortitude, what kind of guts they have after getting thrown around and slammed around and hit upside the head. Can they dig deep and bring it? Because they've never been to this stage before, whereas the Golden State Warriors have. So let's see if they can forget that they're on this stage and just play their game and bring it back at Golden State and play some defense. And I'm with you, JC. We haven't played defense yet. We haven't played a shred of defense. It's like we're just lucky that Golden State's missing some shots. We just And turnovers are going to stop. Turnovers are just killing us.
Well, I'm going to get back to the Celtics. You're going to break down specifics. I have something I want to talk to you guys about with not only Tatum but Marcus Smart in relation to what you said, JC. But let's go to the phone line. Go back to the radio. Let's go to Lou in New Jersey, who joined us here on the Going Old
Yo.
Show.
Yo.
How are you doing, buddy? What's going on, Lou?
Happy finals.
Lou, what's going on?
Happy finals, everybody. Yeah. Well, if the dreaded Celtics, who I despise, are going to make a move here, they got to get on the ball early. No offense to Celtics fans, of course, but
what gives?
Well, you know, because I'm a Knicks fan, so you know how I feel about the Celtics. So
well,
anyway,
I'm sorry about that. Another team feel sorry for you.
I know. You don't have to tell me that. I've been, you know, trying to figure out what is wrong with this team. But anyway, the Celtics need to step up more, you know, not fall behind so much in the first half, because when they fall that behind, they can't seem to find a way to catch up. Now, if it wasn't for that miraculous fourth quarter turnaround in game one, you know, I was already ready to count them out of that game. I thought the Warriors had that game in the bag, and look what they did. But for some reason, the Celtics found a way do it on the Warriors home court in game one, which I think stunned everybody who watched the game. But Klay Thompson came back strong in game two, and that's how the Warriors were able to tie the series. And if the Warriors can keep up with that, with Green and Thompson and all that, they're going to have this series. And no one is to blame for the Celtics losing it but themselves. You can cry and complain about the refs all you want, but in the end, you lost the game. Not the refs, not anybody else. You just didn't step up.
Yeah, I can't argue that, Lou. I can't argue that about the rest. But, you know, again, and I'll point this out, Lou, and you guys can follow up, John and Joe. It's fine when you get this far. I mean, you have the role players, and we look at the role players, and they're going to play a big, big say in the outcomes of games. But it comes down to the stars.
I hope so.
It comes down to Tatum. It comes down to Brown. Mm-hmm. It comes down to Thompson, and it comes down to Curry. As those four guys are going to dictate for their respective teams how this series is played out, regardless of the role players.
Mm-hmm.
It falls into place. Hey, you know, in business, it starts at the top. In teams, it starts at the top with management. And on the court or field, it starts at the top as well, more so in basketball because of the flow of the game, Lou, John, and Joe, as it does in any other sport. Lou, your thoughts, and John and Joe, your take after that.
Yeah, like I said, as it comes down to it, the stars do step up, you know, in games like this. Well, they're supposed to step up in games like this. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But generally, you know, the stars like Jordan back in the 90s, LeBron in this era, they wouldn't step up, and that's what's going to, you know, make a difference in this game. If the right players step up, you know, that's how it's going to go. Unless you got 2016 in Game 7 where the Warriors had a lead and all of a sudden,
yeah.
And they lost.
Go ahead, JC. Go ahead. JC, you were saying something.
Neither side can win with their two studs being average.
Right.
Curry and Thompson cannot be average for the Warriors to win, just like Tatum and Brown can't be average. The thing that scares me as a Celtics fan is Klay Thompson has been very average in the first two games, and they still won a game pounding them in the second half. Be wary about them. He's rushing his shot. He can't play as well defensively. If that guy gets it going, be very afraid, Celtics fans, because you cannot contain two shooters like that who are going. Curry's going to get it. That's fine. Let him eat, just like they did with Durant in round one. Let him eat. You've got to contain the rest. It's like night and day. You can see it on both sides, you know. In game one, White, Horford, Smart, they all got theirs. 15 out of 23 from three. Draymond Green was right. Those guys aren't going to do it again in game two. Guess what? The big bupkis, 0-0-0 as far as three-pointers. Why? Because Tatum and Brown were turning the ball over too much, not getting the ball to them in good spots, open looks. It matters when your stars don't do what they need to do. And Chips, you're absolutely right. He cannot be average Jays here.
Lou, you know I'm only busting the chops about New York teams. They have no personal pandemic against you. I just like to bust your chops because it's easy to do against the guys from New York because, oh, wait, I despise that city because it's a home of Chip's favorite team, the Yankees.
Thanks.
Lou, any final thoughts?
Okay, I guess I deserve that, you know, because New York has been, you know, kind of like a dumping ground for most of the teams over in the past two decades. The Giants, Jets, the Knicks, and the Nets, who are starting to look good until recently. So I get that. Well, despite that, try to call my show anyway on Saturday, and we can discuss it more.
Go ahead.
On the Enhanced Sports Show, Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m. at Eastern Time. And remember, it is a live show like this one. So call 512-543-4662. I'll repeat it again, 512-543-4662. You know we're going to be talking the NBA Finals and the NHL Conference Finals, which is becoming very interesting now. But you know what? I expected it. I expected it to go like this. So
yep.
I'm not surprised. We'll also cover Major League Baseball. We'll even cover some college baseball as well because their players are going right now. And for those of you with special interest, the Belmont Stakes. You're probably thinking, why? Simple. It's the last race of the Triple Crown. Duh. Yes, I cover that too, only because it's a major event. So if you have time Saturday, please give the show a call. And all new callers are welcome.
All right, Lou.
Just keep that in
mind.
Always a pleasure, Lou.
Take care of yourself, man. Thanks, Lou. Take care, buddy. That's Lou from New Jersey who calls us every week, and we really appreciate you on the Going Old School show. I forgot to tell you, we won't talk about power rankings, but if you're a New York fan, spoiler alert, stay really well tuned to the power rankings coming up later in the show.
You'll like it.
We'll see where that goes. But let's get back to some basketball here in the Going Old School. So Chips, Crow, and Joe here for you. Wednesday, it is just a couple more hours, a little under 2 hours now until tip-off at the Garden in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. And I'll talk about little Jason Tatum. JC, and I'll start with you. So we've seen a little balance of facilitator and scorer, and I think we need to see the scales tipped a little bit more. We talked about Tatum and Brown being, you know, having to step up and not being average, but Mr. Tatum's got to be not walk the line between facilitator and scorer. He's got to be more of a scorer, and he's got to take – if they have to take Curry one-on-one with the height advantage, he's got to do it. We've got to see more scoring from Jason Tatum, don't you think, JC?
Yeah, I agree with you. Not only Jason Tatum, Al Horford had a couple of opportunities in Game 2 and was very timid going up against little Stephen Curry, you know, down on the block. And I think they've done a horrible job so far of taking care of those mismatches. Usually they're very good at honing in, and usually it's Tatum taking the task of, hey, I want to be up, matched up against so-so in each series, and does it. And for some reason, he's a little bit off in this, you know, Curry, many times. Curry is not a good defender. He's a first ballot Hall of Fame shooter, champion, mm-hmm. winner, but the dude cannot defend. He's like Kemba Walker out there. So, I mean, yes, go after your mismatches. And they got to do that. And I agree with you, especially in those third quarters, because it seems like third quarter, for whatever reason, Brown and Tatum take their foot off the gas as far as taking the shot. You have to at least take a shot early, not come out of the locker room and launch a three-pointer from Marcus Smart, which has been the case the last couple of games, you know, and really take it to task, because I got to disagree with Lou. The first half have not been a problem for the Celtics in these first two games. They were ahead by two, and they were down by two. That has not been the issue. Heck, they were ahead 21-10. Came out of game two. Jaylen Brown scored 11 points. So, you know, it's the third quarter, and I don't know if it's EMA not making adjustments or their mindset. You know, let's take Jason Tatum, put it on his shoulders the first two or three possessions of that third quarter. And like you said, Chips, take this team on his back and say, hey, I gotcha.
Yep.
And I think that's what they need, is a little bit of confidence in that third quarter. Say, hey, I gotcha. It's not going to be the same as it was.
I agree with you, JC. It's like you just come out in the third quarter and just like the boys should be shooting the ball. They should be, and not threes. Drive to the basket, take advantage of mismatches, and just you shouldn't be launching up threes to start the third quarter or the first couple of times. So, like, it should be a good game. The first half has never been the issue. It's just the third quarter has been the issue all playoffs, and it hasn't changed yet. So until they figure out something and change something up, it might be a long third quarter again tonight.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead. Go ahead, JJ.
What has happened to Grant Williams?
Well, I mean, first of all, he's a role player. Sorry, Joe, if you don't mind me starting. He's a role player. I heard he's given up a little bit more. But, I mean, what are you expecting from Grant? What's a normal game for Grant Williams now? I mean, you know, is it 20 points? Is it 10 points? I mean, I don't know what to – I haven't seen enough of Grant Williams at this level and for this period of time to really know what to – I guess I'm going to answer the question with a question. What do we expect from him? Point-wise, turnover-wise, assist-wise, is he a double-double guy? Is he a 10-6 guy? Is he a rebound, 8-point guy? Joe, follow me up here. But I don't know what to expect from him yet on a game-by-game basis.
What we need to expect is not offensive. He's not bringing anything defensively to the table neither, which is like he brought in the Milwaukee series defensively. He has not been bringing it in this Golden State series defensively at all. He has been non-existent on the defensive end. And in the offensive end, he's got his hands down his pants playing with himself more than trying to do anything else. But I expect more defensively from him. I want him to be a defensive force. He needs to be that defensive force, rebounding, boxing out, stopping the guys, and contesting three-pointers up on the screens. And offensively, he's just the added extra. If you pass the ball enough, he'll be there. But that depends. You haven't passed the ball enough. You're throwing the ball away instead of passing around. Because if you pass around, move the ball around enough, he's wide open. But you got to get to that point first. And they haven't got to that point at all as far as passing. They keep on throwing the ball away.
I have something I want him to do, JC. I want Grant Williams to come out in the first minute tonight. Grant Williams, and take a technical and get in Draymond Green's face. Establish that physicality.
I'm thinking the same thing. I was thinking the same thing. Get in his face, take a tech. Who cares? Give him a hard foul. I mean a hard foul, hard clean foul, and let him know you're there and we're not playing around this game.
Yep, we heard him. Odoka talked about it. He said, if we have to match their physicality with their physicality, that's what we should do. So I guess an answer, JC, forget the stats. Just take one for the team and get the technical, but establish that physicality with Mr. Green because say what you want. Like you said, JC, he got under Brown's skin and it paid off for them. But, JC, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. You know, to me it's never been about stats, you know, that one game against Milwaukee where he lit it up. You know, 7 3-pointers, most attempts to Stephon Curry. That's never been who Grant Williams has been for this team. And, Joe, you hit it on the head. It's that defensive pressure. It's that kind of little kid brother who's just going to be sticking your craw, that mentality. That's what he brings to this game. It's kind of what Draymond Green brings to the Warriors on a whole nother level because Green is a Hall of Famer and has been doing it for so many years and get how to do it. Grant hasn't figured out the spots to do it because he did get under Grant Williams. Grant Williams got under, you know, Draymond Green's skin early, and Green turned it around, and he put it back on the Celtics, and they responded with nothing. So I'm with you guys. That's what I want from Grant. That's what I want from Marcus Smart tonight is to be who they are, like Imo Udoka said. Be who you are. Those two guys are nasty when they want to be. Let the other guys, Jason Tatum, Brown, let them be the finesse guys that they are and go from there. Because I don't want Tatum and Brown, you know, getting in people's faces. Not who they are. Not who they are at all. But you can let the Smarts, the Tices, the Williams, that can give you a little bit, especially in front of the home crowd tonight.
Going old school show, Chips Crow and yours truly, Chips Crow and Joe here for you on blogtalkradio.com. If you want to join us, 515-602-9730, 515-602-9730. One final thought before we move on to some hockey after this, especially locally here. Marcus Smart's a guy I'm going to look at tonight. JC, I'm going to start with you because we mentioned game one. Didn't play in the fourth quarter. Maybe got the message that maybe Ime Udoka saying, Marcus, you took the last five shots in game seven, in the last game of the series before that, and you almost cost us the game, so I want to sit your butt down and let Pritchard, and we'll bring you in with 3.5 minutes after we're up by seven in game one. And we know Marcus Smart is very emotional. That can be good. That can be bad. We've heard some of his post-game pressers. I mean, if you're not a Marcus Smart fan, he seems a little more, maybe he's building himself up a little more than he should, a little more important to the team. You can argue that if you will. But a guy who really thinks that his play is very important to his team, and I get that. And, again, you can argue it. I'll back it. But he seemed to be pouting last game, and I'm not sure if that was based on him not playing, not being a contributor in the fourth quarter of that game, in that game one victory. And game two, I didn't see the same Marcus Smart. So, JC, I'm going to start with you. Do you think he's pouting a little bit, a little unmotivated, maybe a little tail between his legs? And we talked about what he means to this team and how he's got to get back in his defensive prowess, being the defensive player of the year. That's one guy I'm watching tonight, Marcus Smart, in his demeanor. And I think he has to be a big contributor on the defensive prowess of the Celtics to be a contributor. But I guess what I'm saying is we see a little emotional Marcus Smart, maybe kind of pouting a little bit, JC.
I hope that's not what it was. He obviously has not played his best basketball in the last two games. I mean, he played so badly. He was minus 14, plus minus, got him benched during that run in the fourth quarter where they came back. He was minus 11 the other night in game two. His shots off. I hope he's not putting this on himself as far as the pout, because he has deemed himself the emotional leader of this basketball team, the guy who leads the two other superstars. He's kind of their guru, according to Marcus. He told us that after game seven against Miami. You know why I'm here. Everyone knows what I'm about. So, you're in a tough spot here. 1-1 at home, a place you've already lost four times in the past couple of series. It's a good spot for the emotional leader of your team to say, all right, boys, let's go. Pick it up. Let's come out here, grab two, and then go win it in San Francisco. So, yeah, I'm with you, Chips. I want to see something. I mean, this team, you know, they've had a lot of accolades thrown their way. You know, all they have to do is look on Twitter. ESPN's still giving them an 86% chance to win this series.
Yep.
How the hell is that high? I want to see the coding on that computer, because there's no way in hell they're an 86-14% favorite over the Golden State Warriors. That's just
great.
But they are too good to have that much of a favorite over.
Oh, I agree. It's like you shouldn't be that high of a favorite, because there's not that much difference between the two teams. I think Boston is the better team from player 1 to player 15, but not 84%. It's like, you know, ESPN just likes to pick their guys and go from there, and likes to freaking go with the flavor of the month. And right now the Celtics are the flavor of the month since January, because look at all the things they've done. Well, stop reading the papers, boys, and start doing it on the court, because if KG hasn't gotten in their ear yet, if Maxwell hasn't gotten in their ear yet, if Robert Parrish hasn't gotten in their ear yet, nobody's going to get to these guys, because Celtic pride runs deep and should run deep. And it's been there, but only time will tell tonight.
Two numbers to pay attention to, gentlemen. Turnovers. Boss, the Celtics are 13-2 when turning the ball over 15 times or less. One more turnover, 16, they are 0-5. So if you want to pay attention to one of the more lesser stats percentage-wise, you want to talk about field goal percentage, three-point percentage, check the turnover ratio, because that's a very, very, you know, you talk about turnover ratios in football, I'm a big thing, that it's a great equalizer. and it has been a great equalizer or neutralizer, depending on which way you're looking, if you're the Boston Celtics. So looking into that little prediction, now, I like the Celtics tonight, guys. I'm not going to pick a point. Well, you know what? I'm picking the Celtics by six tonight. I like the Celtics. I think it's going to be a rocking garden. I think it's a good spot for them after a loss in the playoffs. I like the Celtics by six. Casey?
Before I give you my prediction, I just wanted to spell a myth that's out there on social media today.
Yep.
The Celtics are not 12-0 when Scott Foster refs their games. By the way, he did ref game one against Milwaukee. I don't know if people remember that, but he did. He was supposed to ref game six, and he was sick. But they lost at home, remember. They are 16-19 when Scott Foster refs their games. So let's the Warriors trying to, you know, push that theory that the NBA is rooting for the Celtics, because that's not the case here. And with that said, I'll do you one less, Chips. Celtics by five.
Okay.
Well, the green come out, and you know me, I say the Celtics by double digits, 12 points, and I think the Celtics make a statement, finally show up and play, hit some shots. They Green gets smacked upside the head early in the game. Celtics play their game, and I think they'll win by 12.
Like it. Quick Celtics thought before we move on to hockey. Chip, Chrome, we'll start with you. Job opening in Utah. Is Brad Stevens the next coach of the Utah Jazz?
No, he is not.
Hmm. Joe, any thoughts?
No. I think he stays here. I think he's making his move here and making his mark here.
Here's the one thing, the one caveat I'll throw into that. Sometimes coaches are meant to be coaches. I'm not so sure. We don't know for sure if Brad's that way, but he has a pretty decent track record of coaching. I'm going to say Brad Stevens will be named the next head coach of the Utah Jazz, only because I just think it's in his blood and it'd be a perfect fit. Not a big market. I think it's where he would be. Familiar with Danny Ainge. I think Danny would like to have him back. And he's taken over a hell of a roster there in Utah. I think Brad Stevens makes the jump, and after the season is over, series, he heads to the Utah Jazz and walks the sidelines next year. Having said that,
and Chips, I will agree with you that coaching is where his first love is, and I agree with you. After probably another year or two, you will see Stevens back on the sidelines, but not in the NBA. I don't think he likes dealing with players that are of the star level, doesn't like the mentality, likes the young guys. I think you're more likely to see Brad Stevens on the sidelines at the Dunk as coach of the Butler Bulldogs again.
How about
before we're going to see him back as coach in the NBA.
That's a good point. Going back home to Indiana. All right. Joe, any thoughts?
Nice.
Any more thoughts?
No. I'm fine with this. I'm fine with moving on to the wanted Boston Blitz.
Joe, I'm gonna start with you because I know you're chomping at the bit. The Boston Bruins made a big move this week. They fired their head coach.
In the middle of the NBA Finals, where the Boston Bruins are notorious for trying to sweep things under the rug by doing it at times where nobody's paying attention.
The last time when they fired Claude Julien, I believe it was during a parade, right? For the Patriots. Joe, I want to start with you. What does this firing mean? What's the direction this team is going? Or, more importantly, is there a team direction they're going in? Because right now, I'm a little cloudy on it. Joe.
Well, I see it circling in the drain, but that's beside the point. It's like, look.
What's the direction?
The guys in charge are the guys that are the problem, Neely and Sweeney. But as long as you have a non-existent owner, Mr. Jacobs, these two can do what they want, and they don't pay attention enough. And it's like he's drafted piss poorly, given a coach not a lot to – and wait, for you to actually come out and say that we had plenty of depth and there's no excuse, are you kidding me?
God.
It's like depth, it's like, you know, a bunch of third and fourth liners who were supposed to play on the first and second line? No. Sweeney and Neely need to go. Neely was a great player, loved by the Boston fans. I loved him as a player. Oh, man, do I freaking hate him as a freaking executive, because he's just like, nope, I have no use for him. And Sweeney, he was above-average defenseman. He's not even near average as far as a freaking GM goes, because it's like, can I have Chiarelli back, please? And that's saying a lot.
JC.
Yeah, it's a case of, you know, former teammates covering each other, covering their own asses. They were roommates back in their playing days, and it's Neely covering for Sweeney. And Joe, you're right. It's the ownership's fault. You know, I have no problem if the team wanted to move on from Bruce Cassidy after 14 seasons in both Providence and Boston because they felt the room was lost. We saw it in baseball with Terry Francona. We've seen it all over the place. The problem, though, is if you're going to do that, at least take Neely and Sweeney with them, because they've had as much to do with losing that locker room as Cassidy has, because he just hasn't provided enough talent to that locker room. I mean, but the problem is, and Chips, we talked to Charlie Jacobs many times on our days at the Score.
I remember.
He was fine when he was running that team. Problem is, now his five other siblings are now involved in running that team, which has caused it to be an out-of-market ownership. It was bad enough when Jeremy Jacobs was the sole owner in charge and just wanted to run things from Buffalo. That's why Harry Sinden stayed around for so long and just kept blaming coach after coach after coach after coach. But now you've got his siblings recreating the same mistakes that the dad did. And unfortunately, we're going to have to pay for the sins of the father, handing it down to the kids, because now we're left to, oh, please, Patrice Bergeron, please come back to us. Please, David Krejci, please come back to us so we can have a 500 season and get bounced in the first round next year.
Right.
At some point, this team has to move forward and admit that they need talent. It's what the Patriots are going through now, post-Brady.
Yep.
You have to have talent.
There's only one justification I can see for them firing Cassidy, and that was something happened on the exit interviews with the players. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a dissension, but JC, you trumped that by saying if the players are unhappy, it's because of the talent, then it falls higher above the Neelys, the Jacobs, the Sweeneys for not getting in. Talk about a depleted farm system. They have nothing down there, nothing on the farm. So if you're now, having said that, moving forward, if you're looking for a rebuild, which is clearly what this team is doing, it's going to be beyond you. So what are you doing? You're in a rebuild. So if you're just hanging around for a year to make the playoffs again, and Bergeron goes, and so forth and so on, and say what you want, pull the plug on everything now is what I'm trying to say. If it's a rebuild year, which is seemingly what it is, and something happened in the locker room with the players, with Cassidy, then start over, and you can still clean house. And you need to do that at the top. This is a perfect indication of it, because it clearly, to me, is a rebuild year, and you're just going to stay the course for one more year and get then again waste a year and waste talent and look to have a bad season and jump forward to next year. And then you're going to do what you should be doing now? Foolish, 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 and it's becoming too commonplace of this team. Jay.
Yeah, no question. And add into it that you now have injuries to Marchand, to McAvoy, to Grizzlick, that those guys aren't going to be back until October, November, December. Oh, my goodness. It's just a mess.
Yep.
And you could have just said, you know what? We know what we're facing. It's a mess. But we're all going to rebuild together. And they just didn't. They chose not to do it. It's unfortunate because as a fan base, that makes it just no reason to get excited. And we all get excited about the Bruins because, you know, they're going to grind. They're going to give you the effort. And I just don't think this team has it.
Right.
Problem is you've got Lindholm still. You've got Charlie McAvoy. You've got enough talent to become a middle-of-the-road team. And it just shows that all they care about up above is making the playoffs, making it good enough, just being good enough to not be on the bottom of the list. and to get a couple of home games in the playoffs and to be good enough to draw fans in there. But at one point, at what point do the fans say, screw you, and stop going and stop sending a message to these guys and say, okay, is there enough passionate fans out there that can resist the urge to go, keep on going to the games? When are those empty seats going to be disguised as ticket holders? And until people do that, they're going to get away with this. They're going to get away with having marginal teams because we have too much talent to bottom out, but we have no talent enough to make it past the first round. So here we go in the 1980s again of, like, just marginal teams, and get used to it, because until somebody wakes up, that's what's going to keep on happening.
He's Joe Ferrand, John Crow, Johnny Sanchez here on blogtalkradio.com. The Going Old School Show, we're in the classroom for about another 45 minutes or so. That's our hockey take, Bruin-wise. Good conference finals. Colorado awaiting the New York Ranger Tampa Bay Lightning series. So we'll see if Tampa Bay is going to have a chance to go for their third straight Stanley Cup and create what a dynasty in hockey would be. But we'll see how that shakes up. We're going to move on to baseball now. We're going to do our top five in a little bit. Little pitch day in Pittsburgh Pirates history, if you will, for, you know, bleeps and giggles. But let's talk about the beloved Boston Red Sox, JC. Hitting a roll, two games over 500, doing really well in a West Coast trip that I was really scared they wouldn't do well on. What have you seen from this Red Sox team to give you any sort of hope? But they're playing well now. Three complete games by the staff. No other team has come close to that. Your thoughts, JC?
Yeah. Momentum is as good as the next day starting pitching, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, after a homestand where you thought you were going to take care of the Orioles and the Reds, and you lost 3 out of 5 to the Orioles, you split with the Reds, here you go. You go out on this dreaded 11-game road trip, and, hey, it's what the doctor ordered, right? You sweep the A's. You've taken the first two against the Angels, who fired Joe Maddon, you know, over the course of the last 48 hours. And, you know, things are right. And you said it perfectly, Chips. Their starters over the last week, only two starts in which they've given four or more runs. Mm-hmm. And Waka with another gem two nights ago. All my late nights again, you know, kind of rolling into each other. And
I hear you.
They rebounded last night, right? You think that the Angels getting their new manager, interim manager, Phil Nevin? Here you go. Otani with a double. Trout with a home run. You're thinking, oh, crap. Here's Whitlock going to, you know, pee down his pants. And, you know, there goes the winning streak. They come right back, get three. They go down 5-3. They come back and tie it. They win it on an opposite field single by Christian Vasquez. You know, who comes along again? Trevor Story. Together, the hitting, the defense, the speed, it's all coming together, Pepper. You know, and hey, it's a long season. Last week we were talking about, oh, my God, the sky's falling because of what they did against the Orioles and the Reds.
Yep.
But enjoy this, because this team is capable of this. But the caveat is this. They still lack the same things that they lacked last Wednesday when we last talked. They still lack a legitimate closer. They still lack a legitimate first baseman who can play defensively.
Yep.
Frenchie's great. He's hitting the ball. But they're going to be in those 2-1 games. We're all going to be sitting here saying, oh, man, we would have won that game if not for, you know, Frenchie catching the ball or Brian Dalback catching the ball at first base. So there are things to improve on for this team. I just hope management sees it to reward these guys because they are putting in the effort.
Yep.
I mean, they're third in hitting. Can you imagine that? This team who couldn't hit a lick the first month of the season is now hitting .260. They're eighth in ERA at .352. They've done the work. Reward them, Heim Bloom. Give the money to Bogert. Give the money to Devers, even though you don't need to do it for 3 years. But, hey, we're getting giddy here, right? And go get him a closer.
Yep.
And go get him a catcher. I'm a Vasquez fan. It's like they need a defensive catcher. Look, it's well hidden if he can give you a little bit of offense, but his defense isn't there. The same holes are sitting there. So fix it. And that way you guarantee the wild card spot. It's like your third spot, the wild card spot. but you still need to fix a few things. So now go out and get it. You've fixed the farm system somewhat. You've got pieces to trade off. Well, do it. And like you said, JC, sign Bogaerts. Just give him an offer that he can't refuse, because the man needs to stay here. You can't. Don't let him walk. Don't give him an excuse. Go get yourself a closer. Go get yourself a legitimate closer, because your closer of the future is sitting down there in Pawtucket right now. But get somebody that's a good backup. Not Pawtucket, I'm sorry. Worcester, I'm sorry.
I love it. You can keep the Pawtucket reference, because hashtag plus ops forever, baby. That's my motto. But you made a good point, yeah. And so, that, you know, hey, 9 out of the last 13, they haven't lost on the West Coast swing, 3 against Oakland, 2 against the Angels. They take on the Angels later tonight, Nathan Eovaldi. Pivetta goes tomorrow, who's been pitching lights out, and that ballsy Pivetta with that scowl and that demeanor and that demonstrative attitude, love it. I love Nick Pivetta, and he's, you know, he's come on after really, really struggling to start the year. So the setting pitching is doing what they're doing, but you said it, JC, there's still these holes to fill, and you can't get lost in the shuffle and fool's gold and say to French Cordero and Bobby Dubnyk are the answer. They may be what they need now, but they're not long-term answers, and long-term meaning at first base later on in the year. Franchi's really done something to his swing. I like what he's doing, and he's coming on, but they're no long-term solution at first base. So they got to go out and address that. Hello, Kyle Schwarber. Again, we said it last week, make the call to the Phillies, although they're playing much better since the firing of Joe Girardi. And that's our Red Sox team. But I want to talk one more little baseball question, JC. We talked about it on the onset. Two managers fired in this past couple weeks. Madden was one, you mentioned, and Joe Girardi in Philadelphia. You don't see that a lot in Major League Baseball. Teams panicking a little bit sooner than they thought, JC, and maybe jumping the gun with, you know, seven teams now from each league in the playoffs, and maybe they're a little bit closer to a playoff berth if you're an 85-86 win team projected-wise, and some of these teams are. Angels started out really well. 13 in a row they've lost. Philadelphia has had their expectations. We heard about Joe Girardi, something wrong in the clubhouse. He's a manager that it's either going to work or not. We've seen that in other clubhouses he's been in. We saw it out in New York. But our team's panicking now with seven teams being in the playoff hunt in each league, and that's how we're seeing early firings in Major League Baseball, JC. And Joe, follow that up, if you will.
Yeah, I think so, because you have that extra wild card team in each division. Yes, you have to make that move earlier, and I think you hit it on the head with the clubhouse issues for both teams. The Phillies with Joe Girardi, and you're right. I love the guy because he's no nonsense.
Right.
But with the, you know, current day athletes, majority of them don't want to be, you know, don't want to be treated that way. So, you know, it may rub people the wrong way, especially when you're losing. So they didn't get off to the best start, but they're still in contention. The Angels, a little more curious story, just because you're right. They got off to the 24-13 start, but then you lose 12, 13 in a row, you know. And in the midst of that, we find that Mike Trout doesn't get along with Joe Madden. And boom, we saw it in the dugout over the weekend where Joe Madden's trying to, you know, wax poetically to Trout after, you know, he grounds out. Wasn't really, you know, thrilled about his hustling and everything. And Trout looks at him six ways to Sunday and walks away. And, curiously, Joe Madden gets fired the next day. Huh. Imagine how that happened. Hey, I'm with you. If I'm Moreno, the owner, I got that much money invested in Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. You got to move on from a guy who isn't lighting the world on fire. He hasn't brought you to playoff fame like he did with the Cubs. But you know what? Move on. Phil Nevin's a great baseball guy. Maybe he'll have a little spark. Hopefully it's after the next two games with the Red Sox. But, hey, you got to make that push, at least make the attempt, because you're looking about an Angels team who last week or about 10 days ago decided to rip up the lease with Angels Stadium.
Yep.
They're looking for home, people. This is much more about – this year's team, this is about the future salvation for that team and their future. So, you know, hey, we've said it for years on this show and on the score. The Angels have been so talented and haven't won a damn thing. At what point are they going to put a baseball guy in the GM, GM seat and get them a winner?
Yep.
Because, hey, the Dodgers are going gangbusters. They ain't going away anytime soon. You need to get people who can play at that level. And Moreno has refused to do that to this
yep.
point. Maybe this time will be different. We'll see.
Well, I'm with you on this one. Look, with the third wild card, teams need to panic more quicker. They can't give up on a season that early and let the things ride out. With the third spot, look at the Red Sox. They're in the third spot of the wild card. It's like 2 weeks ago, we looked like we were dead in the water. So teams are going to panic quicker and sooner, and it's going to make it tougher to trade at the trading deadline because more teams are going to think they're in it. So, yeah, it's totally different with the extra team in there, so it makes a world of difference. And the Phillies couldn't let it slide any longer, neither could the Angels, because the Angels were sniffing at Houston. Now they're like, they need to get their butts straightened out and start winning again. Like you said, after the Red Sox leave, but, they need to, and Philly seems to can't lose after they got rid of Girardi. So two times with Girardi leaving and saying he's not a clubhouse guy, so that's, you may have a tough time getting another gig.
And, JC, to notarize your point you said about the talent of the Angels, they won a World Series back in, 2000, 2001, and they've had some really good talented teams up until then, but the neglect of not having the guy in office and lack of pitching depth and star pitching has really halted the growth of their franchise. And you look at the two cornerstone offensive pieces in Ohtani and Trout, you got to build around that, guys. These two guys, and Ohtani, we've seen what he does, faces of baseball, man. And the Angels have two of the faces of baseball from an offensive standpoint. And that is something that a lot of teams don't get a chance to have. Two bona fide studs. We saw it here in Boston with Manny and Ortiz. A lot of teams don't do that. You can argue Judge and Stanton in New York, but you have two guys at the top of their game, primetime players, MVP status. We've seen Trout. We've seen Ohtani, a two-way player we haven't seen since the days of Babe Ruth. And for you to neglect that, you're right. Maybe it's a good thing to ripping up that lease, put them in a place where they won't play second fiddle to another team, maybe put a little pressure like we talked about the Rays, moving to a bigger market where fans actually care about baseball more so, maybe put a little pressure on ownership and management to put that product on the field, because in baseball we see the outcry from the fans. Maybe mean a little more than some other sports, but, man, do something, the Angels, guys. You're wasting some talented teams. And, oh, by the way, before we move on to the power rankings, I love what Madden said in the way out. Quote, "You always rely on people in charge to read the tea leaves properly. This time, they did not." Love it. Joe Madden, love him. Speaks his mind. Go drink your wine, man. I love Madden. I love him as a manager. I think you put him in the right situation, you get the most out of him, but I love the parting shot. And you know what? He may be right because they stumbled out of the gate to two losses. And Madden right now is sitting somewhere, probably sipping some of his wine that he has stored away and saying, ha, 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 be that as it may. Chips Crow and Joe here for you on the Going Old School show for about another 35 minutes. But before we get into our top five power rankings, JC is going to indulge us in this day in Pittsburgh Pirates history. But Joe, I want you to lead this off, and I'll follow, and then we'll get into the top five, and we'll go from there.
Well, I've got this week in Pittsburgh Pirates history, but it's one of the biggest trades ever was this week in 1955, where they traded Ralph Kiner, Joe Garagiola, George Mikovich, Howie Pollett, and they got Bobby Attis, Toby Atwell, George Freese, Gene Herman, Bobby Schultz, and Preston Ward. That was one of the biggest ones. I mean, they traded away Kiner because they couldn't afford him. Oh, wait, even back then, Pittsburgh couldn't afford players. They wanted money. Joe Garagiola had a decent career. But, yeah, that was my take in Pittsburgh Pirate history.
Okay, on this date, June 8th, 1989, Pittsburgh became the first team this year, Major League Baseball, to play the end spot in the first inning and then lose the game in front of 18,500 fans at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. The irony of it all, the crazy thing is, The Pirates had a radio voice guy named Jim Rooker, who was very outspoken, very sarcastic, and he said after his team built their lead that he would walk back to Pittsburgh if they did not win. Final score, Phillies 15, Pirates 10. Credit Rooker, who held up his end of the bargain after the conclusion of that season. On October 5th, he took foot, no pun intended, with his friend and began the trek back from Philly to Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh. After walking an average of 24 miles a day, they returned to the Steel City on October 17th to a rousing ovation. The good thing was they raised enough money for the local charities, over $100,000, but that was my day in Pittsburgh Pirates history on the side note, because I kind of vaguely remember that in 1989, Jim Rooker, who still has his knees ache from the day. But that was my day in Pittsburgh Pirates history. But before we move on, JC, you had some breaking news in the NFL concerning the Super Bowl champion Rams?
I do. Before I get to that, just want to pass along a prediction from my brother Joe. He agrees with Mr. Joe as well. The Joe sticks together. Celtics by 12 tonight. So you're in good company there, Mr. Foran. As far as the Rams go, hey, you're Super Bowl champions. You got money to spend. And just proving that Michael Felger is absolutely correct on this point.
Thank you.
Salary cap is crap. Just about, what, a few days after, you know, giving Aaron Donald about $135 million, they signed today Cooper Kupp. They give him a little $110 million extension. Eh, a little $22 million a year. Eh, who says you can't keep everybody and pay them all, right?
There's nothing more boring in talk radio and football-wise than to talk about the salary cap, because you're right. It's a joke. Teams finagle their way around it. They'll keep doing this and doing that, and it's a joke. But that's a big signing for the Rams. And you know what? They're loading up. I give them credit. They said, like Felger says it too, they said, screw the draft. Screw the number one picks. We'll get a good team on the field, and we'll win some Super Bowls. And they've been to two. They've won one. And they're looking every bit that they're ready to repeat or at least give it a go. Again, and the Rams just keep loading up. And he's a guy that, yeah, hey, say what you want. A Rams doing it the right way and a team that hopefully will appreciate football. But, yeah, they're getting it done. That's a big signing by Cooper Kupp, who's kind of soft-spoken, but, boy, what a freaking find he is. Cooper Kupp and the Rams inking a $100-plus million contract, and you're right. They're just loading up, JC. It's incredible. But the beat goes on. What's that?
Sean McVay is sitting back drinking his vodka and orange juice and laughing at Bill Belichick's way because, oh, wait, see, we don't need the draft. We just sign plays and we trade away our picks and get quality back. So there is more than one way of winning a world championship. Rams are going about it a totally different way, but it's working for them. So whatever works, keep it up.
And, guys, now that we're on football, before we get to the Pop 5 Power Rankings, you need to let me indulge in something. So please give me a minute and you guys can comment on it. I am so sick and tired of listening to sports flashes on local radio and maybe all around the country and pointing out stats for a quarterback when he's throwing to receivers with shorts and a helmet on. Today, Mac Jones was 9 for 18, overthrew this and that. I don't care. I don't care what stats are in freaking training. I don't care what Mac Jones did with a helmet, pads, and a fan and drinking Gatorade on the sidelines to receivers who may not even be there. I don't care about what happens. It drives me up a wall. Can't you fill your time? Give me golf scores. Give me cricket scores from England. Give me tennis scores. Give me anything. Anything. I don't need to hear what Mac Jones did in his day of throwing when 9 of 16 for so and so many yards. I don't care, guys. It drives me up a wall when I hear this. I want to eat my radio. I want to throw it against the wall. I want to go drink a bottle of vodka. It drives me crazy. Fill your time with more important stats, guys. I don't know about you guys, and you can vent, but it drives me up a wall when I hear quarterback stats and he threw 70% completion percentage in a game in June in minicamp. It's not going to mean a damn thing in September when the season starts.
But, Jeff, did you see the one he threw to Trey Nixon on the sideline? Oh, it blew my mind. Oh, Super Bowl Nixon! Belichick is the best.
I don't pay attention to football until training camp, these OTAs or whatever. I don't give two shits. Do what you want because I'm tired of Bill getting a question. I don't know. It is what it is. We've already been through that. I don't want to look. Stop asking them questions. Stop pissing them off. And why can't Boston sports guys just like don't ask them any questions? Anybody got any questions for Bill? No, we don't want to ask him any questions because he's going to give us stupid answers.
There's nothing more riveting after riveting than a 5-minute. I said nothing more riveting after a 5-minute presser by Bill Belichick. JC, I remember we used to kind of at a point where you had to dump out of him, right? We just kind of took what we did and ran the cuts later because it just got so crazy. Because, I mean, we ran him all the time back at the score every Wednesday, but there was a point where you had to really listen to what he was saying. And okay, do we cut this off because they're going to alienate listeners to our station because Bill Belichick is really saying nothing? It's comical to think, but back in the day, JC. And Joe, we had to really watch the content of the press conference and want to dump out of it and want to go back to it. Right? Remember, JC, it was crazy because it was just bad radio after a while.
If you want to
Yeah, there's no doubt. And how does Bob Kraft allow it? I get that he's, you know, he's out of it now and, you know, he's not running day to day. And how does anybody in the Kraft family allow that to be the mouthpiece of a franchise who is, I know they made the playoffs last year, but they're rebuilding.
Yep.
You need to have somebody who's going to help your franchise. What he's done the last year and a half in front of a podium has not helped this franchise. You should be in the mode of saying, what can I do to get my franchise $4.5 billion, just like the Broncos got sold for today to the Walmart heir, Mr. Walton.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Off the six, of the six Super Bowls, they were worth $5 billion. They probably come down a little bit from that.
Yep.
How do you get that back over? That's what the Kraft should be asking themselves. And in the interim, while you're trying to build your team back into a Super Bowl contender, you have to have people who are going to do things positively for your franchise. And as much as Belichick was a genius, may still be a genius, who knows? We'll see how all this plays out because nobody really knows what the hell is going on with this coaches. We'll find out. We'll see when they actually play some games in September. We'll see how it all plays out. But as of right now, the way he's going back and forth on the media that none of this matters in May and June after 21 years of telling us that every day means something, no days off, and it all means something, but now it doesn't mean anything until later?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Bill. We know what really is going on here.
Yeah, but aren't you guys more interested with the LIV golf thing going on? Because it's like, you know, there's more guys jumping the PGA Tour, and it's more riveting than thinking, I don't care how many passes Mac Jones had in shorts in the freaking middle of June. I could give two shits.
I'm right there with you, Joe.
Oh, I'm with
the biggest...
I'm with you. I don't care about stats and guys with shorts and 7-7s, 11-11. Could care less. But I just think this franchise is doing themselves a disservice how they're talking about their team, how they're allowing outside sources to denigrate and make negative comments about their team. And the way nationally they're looked at, right now they're being looked at as laughingstock for how they're handling their offseason and how they're handling their coaching staff.
Yep.
That should worry me more than Mac Jones' stats in 7-on-7s today. But the two are linked. The two are linked. And if people think that magically it's all just going to come together in September, then guess what? You're going to be looking at some other teams passing you by in the AFC.
Right. And guys, the biggest, I mean, you talk about the little laughingstock thing is there's an actual competition between to find out who's going to call the offensive plays for this team, all the way down to Bill himself. Is it going to be Joe Judge, Matt Patricia? Is Bill going to call plays? Have we ever, I've never heard of that before. I mean, maybe I haven't paid attention, but has there ever been a team that's have a there's a competition on the coaching staff to find out who calls plays with such and such a unit? It's incredible, isn't it?
Never happened. in my memory. And second off, why does it need to happen? What's the big mystery?
Look, who calls the best 315 draws is going to win the freaking win the offensive.
Oh, goodness. About 24 minutes left in the show here on the Going Old School podcast. Chips, Joe, and Crow here for you live on blogtalkradio.com. We'll get into our – we get a little carried away there, but that's how we kind of – that's how we're going 90 minutes tonight. This is jam-packed. Thank you for listening. On tape, we're live if you want to join us. You can at 515-602-9730. We're going to talk a little wrestling because a lot went on this past weekend in wrestling. JC and Joe are going to kind of lead that off. And I got a little Seth Rollins take because I really like Seth Rollins. But we'll get into that after we continue our top five power rankings in the world of Major League Baseball as it pertains to right now. Joe, start us off, your number five team, and go on up.
My number five team this week is the San Diego Padres, 34-22, second place in the NL West, 5-5 in the last 10 games, led by our old friend Manny Machado, 325, 9 homers, 34 RBIs, OPS of 933, just Jurickson Profar, 7 homers, 29 RBIs. They got 7 shutouts as a team, 340 team ERA. Joe Musgrove still doing all right, 6-0, 1.64. Hugh Darvish, 5-3. Mackenzie Gore, 4-1. Taylor Rogers, 18 saves. Right now, they're holding ground, and it seems like LA's sliding back to them, but I get the Padres right now as my number five team.
Good, Jay.
Joe, I was right with you until 1:20 this morning when Trevor Story came along, third base, motoring home, scoring the winning run on Vasquez, RBA single, surprisingly. And, hey, it's all a snapshot, right? So
yep.
It might be the only time they're in our top five. So number five this week for me, the fourth place in the American League East, Boston Red Sox at 29-27, 6 in a row. Hey, I'm going to give them props while they can get it. 260, the third in the bigs and hitting, 368, 8th. An ERA after being about 15th a couple of weeks ago, and their starters, hey, when you're getting complete games, Pavetta, Waka, Eovaldi, 3 complete games in 2022, you're doing something right. And, hey, they actually won a game in which Garrett Whitlock, not that he had anything to do with it, but he did start the game, and they actually won the same game. So congrats to the Boston Red Sox. Number five.
Wait. JC, aren't you the same guy that picked on me 2 weeks ago for giving the Minnesota Twins the love? Just asking for a friend.
I did give the Minnesota Twins some love. Yes, I did.
Let it be known that at 8:06 p.m. on this day, June 8th of 2032, that John Crow threw the first MLB top five power rankings haymaker here on the Going Old School show with his pick of the Boston Red Sox as his number five team. But hey, way to go on a limb. I love it. And you know what? You're right. It's a snapshot, be that as it may. I have the San Diego Padres, who is my number five team this year. Manny Machado is ripping the cover off the ball and carrying this team offensively. But we talked about the team, and they're number five in ERA. Hugh Darvish and hometown boy Joe Musgrove. You mentioned Musgrove with a 1.63 ERA. And Mackenzie Gore, as a surprise, 4-1 with a 1.50 ERA. Taylor Rogers, blown 3 saves, but he has 18 saves with 26 Ks in 24 innings. This team's getting it done without their big guy, Fernando Tatis. Will Myers injured his knee but is leaning towards not having surgery on it. Tatis is getting close to being cleared to hit, pending a CT scan on his left wrist later this week. For all of baseball, needs Fernando Tatis. Love the player. Love what he does. Love his style. Come back soon, Fernando, because you're coming back to a team that really could use you. Padres are 1.5 games behind the Dodgers and in second place in the National League West, but they are number five in my power rankings here on the Going Old School Show podcast.
All right, so my number four team this week is the Houston Astros, which were 36-20, leading the AL West, thanks to the 15-game losing streak of the said Angels. 7-3 the last 10 games. They got a plus 48 run differential. Jordan Alvarez leading the way with 289, 17 homers, 36 RBIs, 475 slugging. Mr. Steady, Jose Altuve, you know, 280, 11 homers, 19 RBIs, 528 slugging. Kyle Tucker, 260, 10, 33, and a 475. And Justin Verlander still drinking that Fountain of Youth water because he's 7-2 with a 2.13 ERA, 73 Ks in 71 2/3 innings. So the guy is still getting it done. Framber Valdez, 6-2, 2.61. Ryan Presley, 11 saves. They have 7 shutouts as a team. And they've been shut out 5 times. They're 11-5 in one-run games. Right now, Houston's getting it done. It looks like they're putting a lot of space in between them and the second-place team, so I've got them as my number 4 team in power rankings.
We are on the same wavelength, Mr. Joe. Houston Astros, number 4 for me as well. For everything you just said, they now have a 9.5-game lead on the Angels. Right now, they're losing to the Mariners down by a run, but hey, it's the 5th inning. And I just want to point out, you know, this Astros team, you know, you look at them, their core still together, even without Correa, went to Minnesota. But their walk totals just astound me.
Yep.
Alvarez, 28 walks. Kyle Tucker, 28 walks. Alex Bradley, 33 walks. Michael Brantley, who I think could be the glue to that lineup, 24 walks. You know, it's those grinding at-bats. It's, they go deep. And they're just pounding on teams they should beat right now, and they're just doing what they should do. And when you're getting, you know, near no-hitters from Justin Verlander last week in Oakland, went to the 7th inning with a perfect game, you know, dude 7-2. I mean, they got something. They got chip on their shoulder. And, man, Dusty Baker has his critics, but dude just is there every year, you know, so – you know, won't be surprised. They're not going anywhere anytime soon because in that division, you know, they'll be clinching the American League West by, you know, July 4th. So they're number 4 for me with a bullet.
My number 4 team this week, the 4th place Miami Marlins. No, I can't do that in good conscience, JC. They're 4th place. Dude, for everything you guys just said, my number 4 team are the Houston Astros. And I echo whatever you said. 24-9 since May 1st. They're tied with the Yankees with the best record since then. And with the plummeting of the Angels, I mean, they're, what, 8.5 games up now in that division? Wow. And Verlander, you mentioned, Joe. I mean, and Jordan Alvarez has signed a 6-year deal, good from 2023 to 2028. And they're producing. Team ERA is 2.51 during the stretch in May and a 2.64 ERA during that same period of time and the bullpen sports a 2.21 ERA. So they're getting it done. Hitting's going to be there. You're not talking about Altuve's. You're not talking about Bregman's yet. You will before the season's over, but they're getting it done. That's another team that's just there every year, and they're there. And they're my 4 team this week, and they are in our top 5 power rankings here on the Going Old School show.
So here's my surprise in the top 5 is, the L.A. Dodgers have slipped to number 3 in my power rankings, even though they have a 109-run differential. They're 4-6 in the last 10 games. They're 35-20, still got a 2-game lead in the loss column on San Diego. It's just they're 4-6 in one-run games. They had the same issues last year. They couldn't win the one-run games. It seemed like they went to the close games. But Mookie Betts, why can't we get plays like this? You know, 302, 16 home runs. 39 RBIs, 586 slugging. Edius Rios has 7 home runs, 17 RBIs, 500 slugging. Trey Turner, only batting 223, 6 home runs, 44 RBIs, 372 slugging. I mean, they're just, batting-wise, they've turned it off. They got 294 ERA, which is number 1. Tony Gosselin, 6-0, 1.59. Walker Buehler, 6-2, 284 ERA. Tyler Anderson, 7-0, 2.59 ERA. Kimball, 11 saves, even though he's on the shelf right now. They should be better than what they are, but until they can prove it and until they stop getting bored with the competition, they're number 3 in my power rankings.
Yeah, we're right there, Joe. Number 3, Dodgers. I think we're going to be similar the rest of the way here. And, you know, it's amazing for a team. You know, I think they just got to the point where, you know what, they're going to say, deal with our injuries. They've lost three straight. You know, like you said, Mookie Betts is tearing it up again. He's got 52 runs scored. And, you know, they're just going to keep it interesting. It's going to be their biggest issue the rest of the regular season because they're not going to not make the playoffs. They may not win the division because the Padres are there. Maybe the Giants sneak up a little bit. But they'll see how that, you know, what they do at the trade deadline, see if they get reinforcements, see if they get Kershaw back. But the Dodgers are so damn good that between now and October, they just have to make sure it doesn't implode.
Yep.
Because they'll just reload in time for the playoffs and see if they can get it done again. So, number three, the Dodgers.
Ditto here, guys. Number three, I'll hand to the Dodgers as well. But to me, it's all about balance. Offense, they average 5.4 runs a game. They have a 7.61 OPS, both number one in MLB and team in teams in that category. Pitching, they're number two in both ERA and WHIP. So there's balance on both sides, and they've had that all along. And stars notwithstanding, you balance a lineup like that. You made a good point, you guys. It's just staying the course. Dave Roberts, again, we talked about it last year. Just keeping this team on the straight and narrow and focusing and not being complacent enough to where they lose focus and derail a little bit and keep the team from imploding, JC, like you said. But, Joe, there's a reason they're number three in the power rankings because your Pirates went into L.A. last weekend and swept their asses big time. So they should be number three after that, and they are. Mookie Betts, MVP-like with a 302 batting average, 16 homers, 39 RBIs, 967 OPS. They have a three-game set at San Francisco over the weekend, which is always interesting in the state of California because those fan bases hate each other. The LA Dodgers, number three in my top five this week.
All right. My number two in my power rankings are the New York Mets, not the Yankees, the Mets. They have a plus 75 run differential. They're 7-3 in the last 10 games. They're 30-20, leading the National League East, led by Pete Alonso. 282 average, 16 homers, 54 RBIs, 546 slugging. Francisco Lindor kind of redeeming himself right now. 253 average, 9 homers, 45 RBIs, 434 slugging. Better than what he was doing last year. Sterling Marte, 277, 7 homers, 33 RBIs. If he could stay healthy enough for the whole full season, would be great for him. They have 9 shutouts as a team, led by Carlos Carrasco, 7-1, 3.52 ERA. Max is on the 10-day injured list. He's 5-1, 2.54 ERA. So if they can get Scherzer back healthy, it'd be great. Edwin Diaz, 11 saves. Look, this team has got it. They've got to withstand the injuries, get through them, get through the pitching staff with a little bit of injuries, and they'll be fine. They'll come away. But right now, they're my number two team in the power rankings.
Things are looking good for Lou out of New York because, yeah. The Mets, number two, 38-20, first in the NL East after 7-3 the last 10. And they got some good news today on the Alonso, Pete Alonso and Sterling Marte front because both got hurt last night.
Yep.
Alonso got hit on the hand and Marte had the stiff quad, but both are okay. They won't be in the lineup today, but they should be day-to-day and see when they get back. But that's a huge sigh of relief because if you had lost Alonso for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks with anything broken, that would have been devastating on top of all the injuries they've already had because this Mets team, 264, top-hitting team in the bigs, 284 runs. I mean, they're just getting it done. And, you know, say what you want about Buck Showalter, but the dude just continues to get it done. And, you know, just the right mentality for that team at the right time. And, hey, if my Red Sox can't win it, I'd root for the Mets to get theirs. Why not?
I'm right there with you, JC. They're not a hard team to dislike. I mean, say what you want about 1986. We've done lots of things. The Red Sox have, I think, exercised many of those demons since then. Maybe not against the Mets, but certainly in World Series play since 1986. But you're right, Mets are the highest scoring team in all of baseball. They lead the majors in batting average and OBP. They're 3-3 in a West Coast swing. That series last week against the Dodgers I kicked into, they lost two games. You're saying, okay, can they match up? Two come-from-behind wins to gain the split at Chavez Arena in Los Angeles. That told me a lot about that team, the resiliency they have. 5-0 in extra inning games this season. They are 10th in fielding percentage as a team, and they don't even have DeGrom or Scherzer yet. DeGrom throwing bullpen sessions. Max Scherzer continues recovery from an oblique strain and a dog bite on his hand, mind you. But they get those two guys back, and, man, you're looking good. I mean, more speed bumps. You mentioned Marte and Alonso. They dodged him, if you will. But this team is hard to dislike, and I like the owner because he's spending money. It's good to be a fan of any sport, in especially baseball right now if you're in the New York metropolitan area. The Mets looking solid. 8-game lead over the Braves at 38-20, and they are number two in my power rankings this week.
And my number two in the power rankings is Chip, your favorite team, the New York Yankees, 14-15, 8-2 in the last 10 games, winning streak of 7. They have 108 run score differential. Aaron Judge, with the difference a year makes, hitting 315, 22 homers, 45 RBIs, 685 slugging. Anthony Rizzo, doing what he needs to do when they acquired him last year, and he's only batting 213, but 14 homers, 38 RBIs, 487 slugging. Giancarlo Stanton, 280, better than last year, 12 homers, 36 RBIs, 528 slugging. Gleyber Torres, 247, 10 homers, 26 RBIs, 476 slugging. So, I mean, they're getting it done offensively. They're not a strikeout or nothing team, it seems, this year. They're at least hitting more this year than they did last year. But, look, who said Cole had issues? He's 5-1, 2.78 ERA. Ian Talon, 6-1, 2.73 ERA. Mr. Nestor Cortez, 5-1, 1.5 ERA. Severino, 4-1, 2.95 ERA. I mean, and look, you lose Chapman, and wait, Clay Holmes has 8 saves while Chapman's gone. Well, it's like he's stepped up, and they'll get Chapman back healthy. It's like hopefully you get him back for the next one, too. But right now they're a third of the way into the season, and the last team to have this kind of record one third of the way into the season was the Seattle Mariners of the early 2000s. The Yankees are hot, and they're getting it done, proving it. And, yeah, Lou can be happy, but it's not July yet. So relax, Lou. You still got time. We'll be fine. So, but right now, I have the Yankees as my number one team.
Ditto for me. Start spreading the news. The Yankees are good. 40-15, top team, 8-2 in the last 10. And I just give you two words. Matt Carpenter.
Yep.
Pick him off the scrap heap from the Cardinals. All he does, 8 games, 4 home runs. There are most of them are solo shots, but who cares? You know, but it just shows in a season where it could have been very tumultuous with the Aaron Judge contract.
Exactly.
He's handling his business. He's going out and, you know, having an MVP season that's going to see him earn about $350 million from somebody at the end of it, whether it be the Yankees or not, meant to be seen. But, hey, they're taking care of business, and they show no signs of letting up. And how about nasty Nestor Cortez, man?
With the porn stash.
A buck .50 ERA. And you're right. He's got that 70s porn mustache going on. And, hey, if the no-beard rule can do one thing, it can make nasty Nestor look good, right?
You got it. I agree with you guys. Yankees 11-4 in one-run games. Two pitchers this week flirted with perfect games, Cole and Callejon. I mean, things, albeit early, things are falling into place for this Yankees team. They outscored the Angels and the Tigers by a combined football score of 38-7 in 6 games. They lead the majors with a team ERA of 2.74 with the starters at a league-best 2.55 ERA. This starting pitching hasn't been this deep since the days of Pettit, Clemens, and what have you. I'm telling you, this is a scary team because if the hitting falters, the starting pitching is there. If you go four deep, one pitcher can fall, but this is not all. This may be Gerrit Cole's best situation because he's not the end-all, be-all from the starting rotation. Aaron Judge, you mentioned it. Just lights out betting on himself. Front runner for the MVP right now. The team ranks second in fielding percentage. And here's the thing, guys. Chapman, Joe, you mentioned the closing situation. This team could trade Chapman and get another piece to a team that may be needing a closer down the stretch. albeit the Red Sox haven't seen the division. So they get a lot of luxuries with this Yankees team. Bill Power, defense, built. I mean, they're built right now. So it's early, 55 games in, they've won 40 of them. And they're by far my number one team by far in the power rankings here on the Going Old School show. Chips, Curl, and Joe. All right, 5 minutes left, guys. JC and Joe, I want you to give me a quick wrestling take on what happened this weekend, and we'll go from there. JC.
Everybody's hurt. CM Punk wins the AEW title, and now he needs surgery. Cody Rhodes, he tore his tendon, his pectoral tendon right off the bone, has a great Hell in a Cell with Seth Rollins, and he's now out about 5 months. Bryan Danielson's hurt. Adam Cole was hurt. Everybody's hurt. It's crazy. But the one thing I will say is AEW is having a casino battle royal tonight, and the winner gets to face Jon Moxley for a right to fight for the AEW interim title. Joe, explain to me how Wardlow is not winning this battle royal.
There's no way in hell he shouldn't win the battle royal because, like, Wardlow is by far and away the best thing they've got going in AEW. He's the best thing they've got going. And how can he not win it? How can they not have him be going for that championship is beyond me. Because, I mean, they've built him up. And it's like, what are you going to do with him now? It's like, don't pull this creative team BS again, because it's like he should win it hands down. There's enough heels out there that he can have enough wars against some heels and be fine.
I just didn't understand that he was. Yeah, he was the number one contender coming out of a pay-per-view, which he killed MJF. Meanwhile, Jon Moxley loses at the pay-per-view, yet he gets a title shot, possibly? I didn't understand it, and apparently Kyle O'Reilly has just won the Battle Royal. So he's going to face Jon Moxley. Wonder who's going to win that match, Joe?
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder who. And I like what the creative team did with Cody Rhodes. Look, it was a good feel-good moment for Seth Rollins, but they couldn't have him get treated like a babyface, so they had to have him attack Rhodes like that because they need him to be as much heat and heel as he could possibly get, so they couldn't have him go out like that. So I kind of like that, what the creative team did, so I'm fine with that.
You know, though, I loved it as well. The one thing that they missed, because Becky Lynch came out right after Seth Rollins attacked Cody Rhodes to have a match with Dana Brooke. They should have gave her a mic, and she should have said to the crowd, damn, I thought I was evil. I'm not even the most evil person in my own house.
Yep. And I don't like what they're doing. Speaking of creative, I don't like what they're doing with Becky. I hate the road they're going with Becky. It's like big time Bex is becoming crybaby Bex, and it's like it's just not making sense. I'm like, what are you doing to the best female wrestler out there?
Yeah, I don't get the whole deal with making Asuka and Becky Lynch, you're right, two of the best, why they're making them look weak as they are, I have no idea. But at least they made Rhea Ripley look strong. She won the Fatal 4-Way. She now gets to face Bianca Belair at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. The biggest question I have for WWE is they made such a big deal over Roman Reigns beating Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. The dude hasn't had a title match since April. What the hell are we waiting for?
30 seconds, Joe. And my last thought is the best thing they did is when Edge was kicked out of that group, because it's a better group without Edge than with Edge.
Gentlemen.
Agreed.
I wish you could have talked more wrestling, and we will eventually. But you guys, I love listening to you guys. Joe and Johnny have so much energy and passion for the world of the squared circle with wrestling, and we'll continue that again down the road. But, Lee, thank you so much for your time, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure. Joe, John, always, it means a lot to me, man. It was good therapy for me tonight, too, and I appreciate that. Both of you are the best of your families, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank
you. Go Celtics.
First over and under for technical. I got the first quarter.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, for Joe Foran, for Johnny, for John Crow, this is Johnny Sunships on the Going Old School Show, blogtalkradio.com. Everyone, take care of yourselves. Go Celtics. Enjoy your evening, and be safe and be courteous. And, again, lots of love out there, man. No more hate. Stop that. Thanks, Lou from New Jersey. Each and every one. Take care. Be well.